the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guest, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 4241790. You can send a WhatsApp to 253-4679 or an email to cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guest is brought in association with the very good friends at ESFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ESFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right. The reaction to the non-selection of Darren Bravo. Why, golly. I mean, so many things said. In fact, I note with interest, Sportsmax is Ricardo Chambers, in fact, was saying today that he believed that it's something that the selectors should be sacked for. Are we overreacting? That is a question I want to ask on Mason and Guest this evening. I know that Dr. Ford is going to comment a little bit later on, feels that there's no need to go back to Darren Bravo. But, you know, we've had some very, very, very interesting reactions in relation to this whole business of Darren Bravo. As I said, Ricardo Chambers today brought on our local station saying that, you know, it's the kind of action that should see the selectors sent packing. Do you agree with that? I also note with interest that my good friend Carlisle Best has been dropped to the national selector. Oh my golly, how could you treat good old Bessie like that? I know that he did, in fact, apply for the job, but I'm also told that he wasn't even granted an interview. Now, if that is true, that's shame on whoever is supposed to be part of that process. You're talking about a former West Indies cricketer, former Barbados captain. Was Carlisle Best interviewed? My information is that he was not interviewed. He applied for the job, but at least you could interview Carlisle Best. He is no longer selector, and I'm sure that he's not a happy man about that. In terms of the under-19 finals, yes, tomorrow Queen's College up against Foundation. It's going to be tomorrow at the Yorkshire Grounds. It starts at 11 o'clock, and there's going to be streaming of that match. I'm sure that when my very good friend comes a call a little bit later on, the manager of communications at the BCA, Mr. Stephen Leslie, he'll tell you a bit more as far as that is concerned. We also are going to be hearing a little bit later on from the sponsors. So that big game tomorrow, Queen's College up against Foundation, it's Yorkshire, starts at 11 a.m. and it's going to be streamed. And there are going to be reports as well on VOB. No doubt we'll be talking a bit about it more as the show progresses. But let's look at what's been happening in relation to West Indies cricket. Kieran, he's already on Zoom. Kieran Pollard has joined us. A man who's been around for some time now, and it's always good to hear from him. He has been on this show before. Mr. Paul, it's good to see you. What kind of uniform you've got there? Is that a limited edition? Tell us a bit about that uniform you've got there. And where are you? What part of the world are you? How are you, Mr. Powell?
I'm all right, Andrew. It's not so much a uniform as to something that is saving my life from this ridiculous level of cold that the UK is suffering at the moment. But just wanted to say good night to you and the panel and your listeners.
Indeed. All right. But I know you've got some concerns, and it's going to be interesting to hear from you in relation to your concerns. First of all, we can start with your reaction to this whole business of age. Your good friend Darren Bravo has not been selected. Are you surprised by that, young Powell?
I am not surprised, and I appreciate the fact that you call me young Powell. Because in the chairman's view, I think we should have been apparently retired. This is actually a discussion I've had with the selection panel myself before the start of the four-day season last year, where I asked them, you know, if there's a reason why I have not been considered for selection for some time, because over the past 2 4-day seasons combined, I've scored the most runs in the Caribbean. But as Darren alluded to, there's a lack of, well, I can't even say a lack of, there's no communication unless you as a player instigate communication from the selection panel, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you can't say to me that you're not going to select Darren Bravo, but then you select Otley, who's the same age as Bravo. You select a Shane Durich, who's 32, or even the captain, Shehope, who's going to be 34 years old. Are you trying to say to him that he's going to be the same age that Darren Bravo is now, so he's not going to play the World Cup? I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. Like, what they're doing right now, I think there needs to be some sort of selection criteria put out into the public, so everybody, all the stakeholders, all the shareholders can know. Because, I mean, obviously when I made my debut, you had guys like Shivner and Shanda Paul, the Chris Gales, the Marlon Samuels, the Dwayne Bravos, etc., that would take you under their wing. And in any industry, whether it's in school or it's in business, you know, the CEO of Apple isn't going to be 20 years old. It's going to be someone with experience that can guide younger players. So you can't say because you've invested into 2 young players that you can't pick another senior player. I mean, you didn't pick 2 players, you know, you picked a squad of 15 players. So that doesn't sit well with me, and it doesn't really make much sense.
I see. So Darren, you're making the point that you believe that Bravo should have been selected, and you got a problem with communication.
Of course. I mean, even during the Super 50 just concluded, there was a seminar put on by the West Indies Cricket Board where Andrew Fletcher posed the question to the selection panel, is there something against players over a certain age? And the answer that was provided to us is that once you're playing, you're eligible, and once you perform, you meet the criteria for selection. So, I mean, he played, obviously. He performed again, obviously. And it's been back-to-back years that he's performed across formats, actually. So I don't see why he shouldn't be selected. As I said, it's a squad of 15. You don't necessarily have to play him, because I think what will make it look even more ridiculous from my vantage point is if Alec Atanasam opens the batting, which means that you wouldn't have selected a Keon Otley to play. And then you have a Darren Bravo, who's a more tested or proven commodity as at a track record at that level. So you can't select someone that hasn't had such a long run at such a advanced age, if you're going to put it that way, as the selectors say, with only 2 games to his name, as opposed to someone that's already been there and done that. You know, it doesn't make sense, the selections to him.
Philo, good evening to you, sir. I hope we hear you loud and clear this evening, Philo. We missed you badly last week, Philo. Your fan club said, where is Philo?
Ajay, don't get involved with technology. Let technology tell me certain things. I just sat here with technology.
Yes.
I'm just sorry for last week. I'm sorry to you, to many listeners. Good evening, Dr. Ford. Good evening, Kieran. Andrew, obviously, thanks for having me back. It's just technology. Good evening to my friend, Sherlock Hart. Belated birthday. Greetings to him. Okay, birth and heaven. And my friend, Carlos, who drove all the way today from West London to bring me Conkeys.
Oh, really?
So I wouldn't be lonely on Thursday. I wouldn't be lonely on Thursday.
Conkeys, Conkeys with raisins? Conkeys with raisins?
Yes, with raisins and coconut and pumpkin and all the other ingredients.
Yes.
So I just said to him, I'm going to mess. Andrew, I'm very baffled and confused with the non-selection of Dan Bravo. I like Kieran. I know Kieran very well. I admire him as a person, as a cricketer. And he too has been hurt by our West Indies selectors. Andrew, there was a competition called the Super 50. Where a guy by the name of Dan Bravo, captain trainer in Tobago, won the competition, hands down, scored the most runs. I've been consistent for 2 years. West Indies selectors have picked a 15-man squad for 50-over cricket. And this guy cannot get a play because he's 34 years old. But he's scored more runs than the players who have invested in. He's fitter. He showed more commitment. He was consistent for 2 years. and he has not gotten into our squad. My thing is that I like winners. And I'm one that I would like to see Populus, man, Kieran give an opportunity in our test squad. We've tried all kinds of openers. And I believe that we mature late. And I think that Kieran now understands his game a lot better. These are things that have to be taken into consideration by selectors. But we have a selection panel, Andrew, where two of the selectors played in England for a very long time. And they should have an understanding about maturity of West Indian players. We don't mature at 25 because we don't play enough cricket. And if a guy comes through at 34 and does wonderfully well and tick all the boxes, I believe his name should be considered. He should be in the squad. We're pinning our hopes on two young guys, no experience, and a guy who's out of form and not even as fit as a fiddle. But we're going in against a dejected England side with a middle order. It's still question marks over. How could we be looking to take our cricket to 2027? There's a process, Andrew. To 2027. I heard all the debates last week on your program. I was listening. I heard Dr. Ford as well. But you cannot rebuild alone with young people. You got to rebuild with some experience. And I think that Bravo is at the right stage in his career now where he can stabilize that middle. We had a guy by the name of Shamar Brooks, and he's fallen off the ball quite badly. I know with no explanation. He's just fallen off the ball. He has not been consistent. He's lost his form. And I think that when you look at Bravo, who's now come back into his own, and he's an attractive player, I think that he can lend support that that middle order needs. And I'm glad that Kieran made a point that they're starting a workshop with the head coach and the DOC and maybe the selectors. And they said that once you're playing and you're performing, you're eligible for selection. So that is what I wanted to hear. So why now is it a man is not selected, he scored the most runs, but his age is the problem. And I'm not even going to go into the cheer hopes and all those guys because Bravo deserves a play. And the president alluded to it, I think, last weekend, where he said that once you're playing and you're performing, age is not a problem. And I remember some of the same selectors, Andrew, said when I was a young man, I don't mind stop playing, but as long as I am not a burden to the team, I will still play. And Dan Bravo clearly was not a burden in the competition. Maybe he was a burden for the opposition bowlers. But he was not a burden for Trinidad and Tobago. He was a revelation, and he led from the front. And I think he should have been given the opportunity to play against England. And if he was given that opportunity and he failed, then you could say, well, at least. Let's say things don't go to plan. What are we going to do now? We've hurt this young man. Mm. We've hurt him. He's hurt. You can see it in his face. Hurt, Andrew, and the region is right to support them, because what the selectors have done to that young man is not right. Others who deserve players, Hayden Walsh Jr., I know them, you ask the board to put it to bowl at people in the nets. That's not right. Hayden Walsh Jr. should be in our team too, should be in our one-day squad. He has done everything that is expected of him. And I think that we need selectors who carry a bit more responsibility, selectors who understand what is required for West Indies cricket. I'm clear of the opinion. But our selection panel clearly don't understand what they're trying to do. 2027 is 4 years ago. 4 years from now, are some of these guys that they selected now are going to be playing in 2027? That's what you're going to tell me? You're going to pick this squad the same way for 2020 for the next 3-4 years? Well, I'm not agreeing with it. I think it's wrong. And I feel Bravo would hurt. But as I said last weekend on our radio program,
all right. What we're going to do, we are going to, excuse me. Yeah, we're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, we'll certainly continue this discussion. Mason and Guest brought to an association with the very good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, of course, we're going to be doing a preview of that big series between England and the West Indies. David Brooks has already joined us, and we also want to get a Caribbean flavor role. Tony, the noted journalist, who I'm sure is making some notes in relation to the contribution of our very good friend there, Kieran Powell. Interesting thoughts that he's gotten so far. Let me go to Dr. Ford. Doctor, are people overreacting, though? I mean, I heard today a call for the sack of the selectors. Is this a bit much in your view?
Well, good night to the panelists and good night to the listeners. Andrew, I have to say I have the greatest respect for anyone who puts on the West Indies colours or even plays regional cricket. It's a tough game that requires a great deal of, you know, dedication, and, you know, you have to be passionate about it. We had a World Cup where Afghanistan had an average age of around 24, 25. Right. The two teams with the older average age, England and Australia, 32. I believe selectors have to articulate their vision. And once that is stated, I think that the logic behind their vision has to be followed. I'd like to say Shea Hope is 30, and in 4 years Shea Hope will be 34. And Shea Hope is a top 10, is our best one day batsman. So I don't think Shea Hope needs to be injected into this conversation at all. But what I would say is that when you see a player in the 30s, it's usually an established player, a player who has been playing consistently, performing at a high level. And players like that, you've seen the Greeninges, you've seen the Haynes, you've seen Larry, you've seen the Sobers. These are players that are allowed to continue, Lloyd. They're allowed to continue to their final destination when their form falls off. The difficulty comes when you are considering players in the early 30s who have had sinusoid, types of form with dips and with troughs and some highs and inconsistency. I understand what the selectors are trying to do. I know we won't be picking a team to win the World Cup in 4 years today, but, you know, if you look at the batsmen that are there, I understand the Otley concern being 32 and not having any experience, and you know, he finished third in the batting standings. But what they've said makes sense, and I think they've been consistent. I think Mr. Powell's had a pretty good season too. He's had a good season throughout. But, you know, I think if a player's had different opportunities at different times, unable to really solidify and hold on to their place for a consistent period of years, then this sort of thing can happen. So I think it's a knee-jerk reaction and a bit histrionic to say that we're going to, you know, lop off the heads of the selectors because of this type of decision. Because once they've articulated what they're trying to do and, you know, they're consistently with it most of the way, then you can understand. But, you know, I wouldn't want to be a selector. It's a horrible job. You can never please everyone. There will always be some pro and some, you know, logic that goes for and against it. But, you know, in the long run, we want West Indies cricket to be better. The truth is, three World Cups in 3 years, we haven't played a part in it. We haven't won a World Cup since the 70s. The truth is, we're a diminishing force of lacking relevance. So the thing is that we can't say that by doing one thing or the other, we've really altered the course of our trajectory and our destiny as far as being relevant in world cricket is concerned. The question is, can we do worse? And that's a really good question, because we've done so badly for the last few years. You start to wonder how much worse can we do without going to oblivion. But, you know, the short answer is I think that we have to see how the guys do. And, you know, we have a year before the next World Cup, and there's room to pivot. So I don't think we have to get too worked up and dismayed by what's happened so far.
Kieran, you want to respond to anything that Dr. Ford said?
I could respond to everything Dr. Ford said, but I don't want to be up until tomorrow morning. Unfortunately, I disagree with the vast majority of what he said.
Okay.
But he's definitely obviously entitled to his own opinion. The selectors are getting it wrong. There's no long and short about that, because you look at the situation now where they've hurt a Darren Bravo to the point where he's stepped away from the game.
Right.
Andrew, he's not playing cricket. You understand? So there's no, okay, we're playing a young man with the option of reverting to Darren Bravo. We don't know that he will come back to cricket. We don't know that there's a reverting to a Darren Bravo, if you understand what I'm saying. So the selectors have to be very careful. I mean, you look at the situation where, for example, the franchise system that is set up, guys are now going to the US and in a weekend making what they're making to be contracted in the Caribbean for a month in a weekend. So, I mean, if guys continually get hurt and you can go and play relatively a lot easier standard of cricket that requires a lot less work and secure yourself and your family for a longer time, it could be potential for mass exodus of West Indies cricket. And the last thing that any of us want is for the brand or for West Indies cricket that means so much, because at the end of the day, West Indies cricket means a lot to everybody on this call, everybody that's listening to this show. Mm. And we want the best for West Indies cricket. But as a player, I understand and I know that there are lots of players in the region that have or would like to echo the same sentiments as myself, but are scared to talk. Whereas a Darren Bravo has a Dwayne Bravo to speak for him. He has the backing of a TTCB that will go out on his behalf or on the behalf of their players and speak. Whereas, you know, other boards may not do that. Other players may not have someone as senior as a Dwayne Bravo to go out and speak on their behalf. And if you do go out and speak, you're deemed as, you know, being a rebel. You're out of control. This is someone that we want to tarnish and banish from West Indies cricket. You know, you can't have that kind of view. Like, players should be able and entitled to their opinion without prejudice. You know, you can't punish somebody for having an opinion when there is no clear communication between an establishment and its working body. It doesn't make sense. You're contradicting yourself in terms of selection. So then when players do speak out, you should be able and have some room or recourse for conversation to say, well, okay, this is what we think that you need to do to push a case to be selected for the West Indies. And then a player knows, all right, this is the situation, and you can sort of go along. But you don't just come and say, I can't pick a Bravo, but I pick somebody Bravo's age. I also pick people in and around Bravo's age, but just not him. It doesn't make sense.
All right, we're going to get some reaction, of course, from Royal Tony, who's joined us, and David Brooks as well. 4341790 is the call number. You can participate. As a journalist, Royal, are we overreacting? I'm sure you heard from Kieran Powell just now. You would have heard from Phil Wallace in his opening remarks and Dr. Ford. Your assessment of this, Royal?
Hey, Andrew. Thanks a lot. Good night, everyone listening. Good night, guys on the panel. I kind of agree with everyone in what they're saying, particularly Kieran Powell. But Bravo's situation is a tight one. And I heard someone say they don't want to be a West Indies selector. I wouldn't want to be a West Indies. Wouldn't want to be in the seat of the West Indies. Wouldn't want to be in the seat of the West Indies selectors right now, because the West Indies selecting committee over the years have not defined a clear path as to how one could be selected for the West Indies team. Are they using the stats used from the regional four-day competition? What are they using? I'll use my countrymen for an example. We've seen the debacle play out with Shemron Hetmyer and the West Indies team over the past couple of years. We've seen a dismal performance from Shemron Hetmyer, someone of his caliber, in the regional Super 50 tournament, but he was still selected for the team. Mm-hmm. We've also seen Darren Bravo, exceptional performance, high scores, but he wasn't selected. They use, I would want to say, quote, but let's say they use age as an example. But you're given a chance to someone just as old as Darren Bravo in the team. So what do players do exactly? Do you look at past performances of these players that are playing in the West Indies team? And how do you compare that to a turnout of them in the regional tournament? They also selected Shafin Rutherford when everyone has been calling for Shafin Rutherford to be selected in the West Indies T20 squad over the years. He's been playing exceptional T20 cricket at the various leagues that he competes in for whatever teams he plays for, but he couldn't find a place in the West Indies T20 team. Granted, he turned up in the regional Super 50 tournament and had a pretty decent tournament as well too with the bat and also with the ball in some cases. Kevin Sinclair was there too, did exceptionally well for many, doing well in the A team. Many believe that he could find a place in the West Indies team. So the West Indies selectors must find a way to define how players would be selected so players would know what they need to do. It cannot be the performance from the Regional Super 50, because if you're picking performance for the Regional Super 50, then Darren Bravo should have been in your team and must be in your team. Karen Pollard was right. Not everyone has a voice like Dwayne Bravo to speak for them, to represent them, because that's family. And players cannot, we've seen, Andrew, over the years, how things play out when players try to represent themselves. So if I'm a player in the West Indies team now, I would be just as dumbfounded, confused as Darren Bravo, and not want to play, because at one hand, I'm performing and not being selected, and there isn't a clear and definitive way in how I could make the West Indies team. So where do we stand now with our players?
Interesting. David Brooks, you are all the way in England. Your reaction to all of this? How are you, my friend? Not hearing you, David.
Yeah, a very good night to everyone on the panel. And listening to Kieran Powell there, I'm reminded that he is one, having watched quite a bit of regional cricket in West Indies, Kieran is one of those players who looks class above most of the other players on the field. So I can understand certain dissatisfaction in Kieran not being in there. And age, I think, is a red herring, isn't it? Because Desmond Haynes chose to talk about age in press conference, but it was clearly inconsistent in what he said. But I look at the England team and think that I look at the World Cup, Glenn Maxwell, that stunning innings, a 35-year-old who's been in and out the side, given another opportunity. And now look at him. The pressure's off. He's now got his place in the side and he can actually perform. He's not looking, but he spent his whole career, a bit like Kieran and Darren Bravo, looking to see whether they're going to play the next match. How many times has Kieran played for West Indies and been given a run for a whole series? I look at the England team and someone like, I don't know, Ben Stokes, you know, he's in his 30s. I mean, all the Australian side was in their 30s, wasn't it? So I think age, particularly when it comes to looking at the bowlers, Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad, you know, it's age is just a number and it depends on how fit. Look at Virat Kohli, fitter now than he's ever been, and no one's calling for his retirement. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, I do appreciate the pressures on West Indies cricket much greater than the pressures on English cricket, where England players have lucrative central contracts. Mm-hmm. And so they have much stronger pull to play for the national team. And there's no doubt that the explosion of franchise cricket has hit West Indies harder than any international side. But there's a word of warning too in the what happened to England in the World Cup, where Jos Buttler, fed on a diet of T20 and 100 ball cricket, was unable to perform in the 50 over version. And in fact, it was a feature of the tournament that a lot of the players who only played T20, they were exposed. It was the multi-format players that did well in the World Cup.
I see. Interesting. All right, let's take a commercial break. We're going to also open the lines 424-1790, and you can get involved. Just want to hear from, of course, Kieran Powell in relation to other concerns in West Indies cricket. But Mr. and guests, brought in association with our very good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want. ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
It's 6:44 in the country. Let's go to the telephones. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Good night.
Good night.
Miss Basing fan. Let me start with my last thing first. Now, where is Weepa in all this?
Weepa
Association, they have not heard a word from them.
Mm-hmm.
Are they to represent the players?
Yes.
Well, it was one. Two. Now, did Mr. Haynes not play till the right old age as it is of 38?
Yes.
So how is a 34-year-old that is performing old? And also to know, are the selectors talent scouts also? I mean, there's only so much cricket that a selector is going to watch.
Right.
And I don't think they are there to determine how a player looks. I heard the chief selector saying the ball now coming out of a bowler's hand better and all that. Mm-hmm. They're not, to me, not a selector's role at all. The selector, how is he seeing all this? Mm-hmm. Is that his role? Mm-hmm. Is that his selector's role? And does West Indies have a policy for selection?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a policy? Mm-hmm. I don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we look around, you see players that are not performing game pit, ones that are performing by the wayside. It happened with Shea Hope too, all the things. Shea Hope was coming back, doing things,
mm-hmm.
was not given a look at only in the, he was a, only a 50-over player. That's how it goes. So you have to look and see what it is that they really want. And what is the role? I heard the coach, did you see the video with the coach speaking to, I think it was Mark Butcher, about how he's seeing the cricket?
The coach.
The coach, Darren Sam.
I mean, I don't really repeat a lot of what Sammy says, I must admit.
No, but he is a selector and a coach.
Mm.
So that when you listen to that video, you would see the reason for the non-selection. So yep. Have a look at it. Don't mind, you don't listen. If you don't want to listen, don't listen. But watch the video that and the conversation he had with Mark Butcher.
Right.
And then it brings a lot as to how the team selection is going to go.
All right. Thanks for your contribution. Let's take a couple of calls and before we go back to the panel. Hello, welcome. 441790, Mason and Guest.
Good night, Mr. Mason, and you and everybody else.
Good night.
Mr. Mason, what was the big darn about? He's the only one who ever get left out. Some of them don't say, I hear one of the things that hurt. You know how much time they hurt the rest of these? And then some of the rest of them hurt, some of them know too. Them hurt the rest enough of them train down as what the rest of these training cricket and warrior cricket races now. Because we'll still in 15 training that we've done one two or three of the player. Tell the, I hear the study got short memory and they're proving that he ain't the form of ever getting level. Mm-hmm. No, he won't even be the last neither.
So you think there's a big, too much of a big hullabaloo about it?
A big hullabaloo. He met 300 somebody running the come home and the boy here who said, and then he had three young commentators say he didn't know who was voting, but who's ever advising wrong. And he heard the rest of it many times. He's a guy that I like too.
Right.
But he don't want nonsense too.
I
so
see.
So if he get hurt now, take he hurt and go.
Thanks for your contribution. Let's take a couple more calls in. 648. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest.
Hi. Good evening, Andrew.
Good evening to you, sir.
And happy Independence Day to you.
Okay. Same to you.
Hope you'll have a wonderful day. Now, Andrew, I must say it is very important. I don't think we should make so much fuss now about the team. That is done and dusted.
Right. Move forward.
And we'll go forward. You see what has happened with Darren Bravo is that has passed. Has come back to haunt him. That is the problem now. So all the talk about the selectors, I don't think the selectors now doing anything different to what the other selectors most likely would have done,
right.
That they've done before. And we can't do anything about this, man. But we can represent players. I even tend to think like any union is wrongdoing. But it's not a wrongdoing.
No.
If a selector don't select you, people can't come to represent what you are playing.
Mm-hmm.
It don't work like that.
Mm-hmm.
People have to keep quiet. If you don't get paid,
right,
or they owe you money, then people can, why it is that you're not getting, or why it's taking so long to pay your money, or anything like that. Or there's certain things that they can come in with, but no. The point is now they're talking, keep talking about Bravo, what? Bravo 34, Bravo in and out, a lot of hot and cold. Last time Bravo played against England, he struggled to get the ball off the square.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the bowling that he got runs off of was a lot of dibbly-dobbly bowling. It wasn't the penetrative bowling that he get these runs off of. I think it's time for him to pack up. Look at all the persons that are playing cricket, that who Dan Bravo plays for outside of the West Indies. He don't go play in none of those series that are going on in Pakistan, India,
mm-hmm.
You talk about Sri Lanka.
Right.
None of those things. He don't play none of those teams. So I don't know what people making all this fuss about now. Get the let the youngsters that we have coming through, the batsmen, give them a chance.
Mm-hmm.
This is the only way our cricket is going to go forward.
Mm. Okay. Thanks, Rock. Let's take another one before we go back to the panel. Hello, welcome. Hello. Mason and Andrew. Guest. Yes.
Andrew, you saw the man talking there? Remember Anderson coming here, drop people saying we're going to boycott? Now look, Patrick Cox, West Indies for one play in South Africa. You know, they bring an old money, Patrick Cox, a spin bowler.
Yes, yeah, I remember him.
Don't worry, Hedge. Don't worry, Hedge. Remember talking about Dan Bravo, this. When Anderson comments got dropped, was a big night in Barbados, eh?
Yeah, 1992.
You can remember that?
People didn't turn up.
Bike. So what are talking about? Devil, pack up and go. Andrew, is not it. England coming on here, we want the best team to win.
I see. All right, well.
We want to win.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bottom line. Nobody looking age is win. Patrick Cox is a big old man.
Mm.
They're putting him back. He never used to play cricket.
They're putting him
and the cup of West Indies after they done.
All right, thanks for your contribution. All right, let's go back to you, Kieran Powell. Any concerns that you have in terms of structure?
Yeah, definitely. I think that there's not enough cricket being played in the Caribbean. That's a huge problem that we face as well. I mean, for a region that's blessed with pretty much 365 days of sunshine there, thereabouts, given the only thing stopping that is probably hurricanes or storms and stuff that comes from the Caribbean. We're not playing enough cricket as a region. And obviously, the first thing that they're going to point to and say is funds or lack thereof, but you look at every football team that goes up for sale, you have people jumping out of the woodworks to purchase all these teams. You have Saudi Arabia pumping hundreds of billions of dollars into various sports. You've got so many, I mean, the West Indies, we're blessed to be right next to the United States of America, and the West Indies brand being what it is. Being one of the biggest brands around the world of cricket. You can't tell me that there's no sports investment group that wouldn't like to invest into West Indies cricket and building and developing West Indies cricket. You know, I mean, I think that definitely playing just 7 1-day games and 7 4-day games, I mean, obviously they're going to say that they've extended now, but it's not sufficient, Andrew, because you look at it, they've got how many cricketers on contract around the Caribbean to play technically, what's that, three and a half months
right.
worth of cricket. So you're training for eight and a half months a year to play just 7 1-day games and 7 4-day games, you know. That's not going to help West Indies cricket to get back to where it needs to get to at all. Not anytime soon, anyway. And, you know, we need to be playing a higher volume of cricket. We need to have more options for younger players as well, you know, academy players coming through. I think they've done a good job with the academy. I have to give them praise for that. I would like to see each region have its own academy, so sort of a pathway system where you have academies playing against each other's and obviously build up from there. But we definitely need to look at a system where, I mean, it doesn't have to be a county season where it's 6-7 months long, but you can sort of do, even if you do a double round where you play 7 4-day games, then you come to the 1-day season, you play a double round of 1-days, and then you come back to a next 7 round of 4-day games. So players will have had at least 2 rounds in each of the formats. I think definitely we need to bring back the Caribbean T20 as well, because CPL isn't doing us any favors in terms of unearthing any local Caribbean talent. You know, you're seeing, I guess, the same players are friends of friends playing in that way. You're not necessarily getting exposure for young Caribbean talent, and it's difficult for young talent within the various regions to get opportunities onto that platform and obviously get the opportunity to go on and play in various other T20 leagues as well. So things like that need to be sort of look into, because I mean, we want to see West Indies cricket strive again, but the only way that can happen with the current landscape of cricket and players not going to England like the old days and playing in the off season and continuing to hone their craft that way is for us to play more cricket domestically.
Well, quite appropriately, Johnny Grave, the CEO of Cricket West Indies, has joined us on the show, so we're quite happy to have him on, and maybe I can go straight to him. Johnny, anything different? First of all, good evening to you. Anything different in terms of the first-class season for next year? I know with interest that you've had it in Trinidad and Tobago. Anything different in terms of what we can expect for next year in the regional tournament? Good night to you, sir.
Yeah, good evening, Andrew. Good evening to everyone on the call. Yeah, we're taking some plans to the board of directors next week at our next board meeting around the first class season. As has sort of become the norm over the last 3 years, we're using the month of January to really get everyone focused on Red Bull cricket. So when we come back in the new year, there'll be a Red Bull focus for the first sort of half of the year. So we'll have and encourage all the boards to have their trial matches in January. The West Indies Championship will then start in February, and we'll play three rounds before having a break, two rounds before having a break, and then another two rounds leading into whoever the eventual winners are. That will happen probably just on the eve of or just after Easter. And then we're looking to have another emerging players or academy tour as well as an A-team tour. So hopefully we'll have about seven first-class fixtures in our West Indies Championship, hopefully two or three rounds of three or four-day cricket and trial matches in January. And then for our best players outside of the test team, three, four-day games at A-team level. And then for our best younger players in the academy, three, four-day games as part of another emerging player or academy tour where we go to. So we just in the process, as you know, of hosting Ireland at the moment, Antigua, and we've got a reciprocal tour to Ireland in May of next year.
I see. So these matches are going to be played in various countries? Have you worked out the
country? Yeah, obviously we've got the ICC T20 World Cup happening across many of the regions, and there's a huge amount of work going on in terms of the wickets and the preparation. So we've got to navigate all the schedule of works for the World Cup venues. But yeah, we're likely to be playing, I would say, more like we played in the old days on a home and away basis, but not quite. The World Cup makes it slightly more challenging, where certain venues and therefore by default certain countries will be unable to host during that February to April period, which is a key part of the preparation of making sure we have not just world-class practice, playing wickets. We need to make sure we've got extensive practice facilities for you know what will be a 20-team World Cup, 10 teams in the Caribbean, and obviously all those teams wanting to warm up, play the group games, play the Super 8s and the semis and finals. So huge amount of cricket in June when the world comes to the Caribbean.
I see. Well, gentlemen, Raul, Tony and of course Dr. Ford, feel free to ask any questions in relation to our good friend Johnny. I'm hearing that Barbados will actually be getting some first-class matches next year, and the venue is going to be the 3Ws Oval. Can you confirm this, Johnny?
No, I mean, 3Ws would be a potential venue for first-class cricket. One of the things that we are proposing to the board is that the combined campuses and colleges join the West Indies Championship along with the academy, so that we have eight teams competing. That, we think, particularly for the academy players, means that coming out of a much more expanded and robust under-19 program, which is now a 12-month high-performance program that the West Indies under-19s go through before the World Cup, means that when you're coming out of the academy 22-23 and with the emerging players program we have with the CPL as well, that hopefully players are coming into their late 20s, that late stage of 23, entering franchise cricket, they're coming with 30 first-class fixtures under their belt, 30 List A team fixtures under their belt, and therefore a much more robust foundation of cricket when they're entering the sort of franchise system. Because the pathway, hopefully, is that you go from under-19s into the academy, and then you go into one of those franchise slots and then make your way through the A team and onto the West Indies international team.
I see. Raul Tony of Dr. Ford. Any questions for Johnny?
Yes.
Raul?
Yes, Andrew. Yes, Andrew. Johnny, how are you doing, Raul Tony Barbados today? When you look at the situation of the West Indies team with all the discussion that happened around the team selection, and you hear a player like Darren Bravo stating that they want to step away from the game, does it bother Cricket West Indies? And how do you deal with a player who might just want to wave the white flag to say that I've basically had enough of representing the region?
Yeah, look, I think, I would say that we've still got work to do in terms of developing talent generally. I think if you look at some of the players that have come through in recent times, under-19s, even Windies B that took part in the Canada League a few years ago. When you start to look at that generation of players, how many of them have really hit the straps and are now dominating international cricket? Not enough, really. We've got some good young players that have come through, but, we need a significant pool of players coming through to put pressure on those top players. I understand any player's frustration when they've been performing at regional level. And that's why, our job really in West Indies cricket is to make the job of selectors even harder. We want to have more players knocking down the door, demanding places in the teams through their performances at regional level or A-team level. And similarly, we want those players who are in the team, to be not necessarily playing with fear, but certainly playing with pressure on their place, knowing that they've got to perform if they're to keep their place in the side. And we hope that having that that kind of environment will lead to pushing players to be their absolute best and not resting on their laurels when they make the West Indies team. Actually, when they make the West Indies team, that's when they really put their foot down and really focus on trying to become a world-class player, because I don't think enough of our players in recent years, last 20 years, when they've finally earned the maroon shirt or worn the cap, have necessarily, then gone to the next level in terms of their work ethic and commitment, because it's a huge undertaking to compete at international level. And some of the tours of, going to Australia, going to England, going to India, these are high-pressure, difficult tours where you've got to be at your absolute best if you want to be successful. So that's the kind of environment that we need. And it's very much still work in progress. But, I must say, seeing the way the academy have worked under Andre Coley last year, seeing how they performed when they were given the opportunity in Headley Weeks, seeing how they've done in Super 50 and against this Irish academy side, I'm looking forward to them participating in the West Indies Championship. I think they've sort of warranted that promotion to that competition. And hopefully those performances that they put in will put all the franchise players under pressure, because there's going to be a huge a sort of graduation of those players as we enter another under-19 men's World Cup cycle. So players coming out of the World Cup in what's now going to take place in January in South Africa, all of those players want to get into the academy. So we need to have some academy graduates in order to free up places for those new under-19s. And that's the whole system that we're trying to foster here.
All right. Okay.
How do you, one more question, if I may.
Sure, sure, Andrew. Sure.
How do you deal, how do you answer the call for people saying that it needs a selection policy for Cricket West Indies? Because at one hand, you go with performances from the Super 50, then someone performs in the Super 50, they don't make the team, they perform well in the West Indies A, don't quite crack into the West Indies senior team. So how do you respond to the call for a robust selection policy for Cricket West Indies?
Mm-hmm. Well, look, there is a selection policy. There's a degree of selection, unfortunately, that is still subjective. You can still only pick 11 to start, and you can still, in our system, only pick 14 or 15 into a squad. So it's always going to be a degree of subjectivity when it comes to one or two positions. You hope that, eight or so of those players are through their performances are absolute shoo-ins, but there is always going to be do you give a player another opportunity? I think what we don't want to do is have players always playing in fear of, and we've got to give them a decent run and give them an opportunity to perform. But at the same time, at some point, the selectors have to make that tough decision. And as I said, actually, I believe our role it is to make their lives as complicated as they can be, with lots of choice, players performing, lots of cricket for them to assess individual player performances. But whatever selection policy you have, it always comes down to degree of subjectivity. But there is one, and it's up to us to make sure they're being accountable to that selection policy. But at the same time, you know, as long as they can justify their decisions to us and through, you know, regular press conferences, justify their decisions to fans. Some fans will agree, some players will agree, and an awful lot will be very vocal in their criticism and their disagreement. But that's the beauty of sport, and you know, that's the case across any team, where you're going to have a view on who should be playing, what position and role they should be playing, and cricket's no different. So, yeah, unfortunately, the process of selection involves a degree of subjectivity, but there is a policy that all the selection panels work towards.
All right. Okay. We're going to take a commercial break, gentlemen, and when we come back, of course, there's a big final on tomorrow in Barbados, so we're going to break away just for a couple of minutes to discuss that. Of course, it's the Under-19 Finals, Queen's College up against Foundation, and that's tomorrow, the 29th, starting at 11 o'clock at Yorkshire Cricket Grounds, and we certainly want to have a focus on that. A Mason and Guest brought in association with our very good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Calling all Caribbean and English cricket fans on Friday, December 8th to meet and mingle with some of our West Indian cricket stars before they take on England in two exciting international cricket matches. The first opportunity to meet the players will be at the Oystens Bay Garden in Christchurch from 4 p.m. We can also see our stars later the same evening at the Pelican Village in Fontebelle, St. Michael from 5 p.m. Let us join the West Indies players as they witness an exciting Bajan cultural display of dancers, stilt walkers, drummers, and also sample some of the best Bajan ham, rum cake, sorrel, mobby, and fish cakes on the island. It's Cricket Comes to Town. We home for Christmas. Special thanks to Cricket West Indies, Ultimatum, Chefette Frosties, Farmer's Choice Ham, Bajan Rum Cakes, Superb Blend, and BRI Delicacies.
All right, so there we have it. Of course, some lovely cricket on its way to the Caribbean. No doubt a bit later on we're going to ask Johnny about that. I'm sure that Dr. Ford and Philo would have your questions. But there's a big final on tomorrow. Let me congratulate the Barbados Cricket Association for the tremendous promotion of cricket. To me, we bring cricket Saturday after Saturday. That started back in 1978. I started, as a teenager back in, 1980. But I remember commentaries coming from 1978. And it's unbelievable that we still continue, despite the challenges, to bring cricket. And I really want to thank the Barbados Cricket Association for the promotion of its cricket by radio commentary, because sometimes we tend to underestimate the value of radio. It's not going to make you a lot of money, but certainly it's going to promote your sport. Nicole Wiltshire, the marketing office of the Barbados Workers Credit Union, is with us, along with our very good friend Stephen Leslie from the BCA. Hello, Nicole, how are you? Nicole? All right, just trying to get Nicole on. Nicole? Where is she? Maybe she's at Yorkshire already. All right, we seem to have a little bit of a challenge with her. Stephen, are you with us? Stephen Leslie?
Andrew, I'm here, and I'm also hearing Nicole very loud and clear.
Oh, you're hearing her, but I wasn't hearing her. Am I hearing her now? Hello, Nicole.
Hi, Andrew. You're hearing me?
Yes, I'm hearing you loud and clear. And that had absolutely nothing to do with me that I didn't hear you. So please forgive me. All right. Of course, you must be quite happy to have the big finals on tomorrow, and the involvement of your credit union. I'm sure you're quite happy.
Yeah, we definitely are. When we were offered the opportunity to sponsor the BCA Schools Under 19 for Hiova tournament, we were quite elated and there was absolutely no hesitation to get involved. Barbados Public Workers Cooperative Credit Union Limited is a brand that is very passionate about youth empowerment. And you know, we saw this not only as an opportunity to sponsor, but to go beyond and you know, make it into something where we make a difference and we reach out to those young people and we equip them with the necessary tools to become financially smart adults. Mm-hmm. Cricket is an integral part of Barbadian society and we are very involved in the community. And that was also played a big part in us making the decision to sponsor this particular event.
Talking about financial literacy, I think that's an important area that you are going in. I want you to develop on that because we need to get our young people very much involved in such an aspect. Financial literacy is important, isn't it?
Agreed. And in this, as a part of this sponsorship, one of the things that we are going to be doing is we're going to be offering a series of financial literacy workshops.
Oh, lovely.
To the players. Yeah, so what we are going to do and some of the topics that would be involved in those workshops would be things such as budgeting and saving, delayed gratification, which would be, you know, if you want that cricket bat, that expensive cricket bat, mm-hmm. that, you know, you have that goal, you look at that goal and you plan to get that by saving, you know, bit by bit. But we're trying to teach them and get them into the habit of consistent saving so that, you know, they're financially able mm-hmm. to get the things that they may want in future.
I see. Fellow or Dr. Ford, any questions for Nicole?
Well, Nicole, I have to compliment your company and also Stephen as a former administrator, trying to get sponsorship for youth was always something that was a little bit easier than trying to do it for the older cohorts. And certainly there's a big relevance because the youth is the future and also having the skills that will help you in cricket and after, you know, is incredible. Stephen, you're investing in the youth and, you know, we know the linkages between economics and cricket. Was it difficult to reach out to the credit union? Did you go to them or did they come to you?
Good evening, everyone, again. And the answer to that, Dr. Ford, is that we would have had some conversations where we went to the credit union and Nicole and her team and others were very keen from the outset to be able to be part of the Under 19 group. One will know per players like Philo, Kieran, Powell, everyone will have gone through a school system at some point before they broke into their national senior teams. And then obviously some persons went on to international representation. So yes, we would have approached the credit union. They would have had some conversations with us. And today we had a wonderful launch. Nicole was there and we had not only the captains for those two teams from Queen's College and Christchurch Foundation who are in the game tomorrow, but we then had representatives from the media. We had persons from a cross section of the Barbadian cricketing landscape present. So we are very happy to work with Nicole and her team at the Barbados Public Workers Cooperative Credit Union Limited. And long may this initial relationship continue.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, we heard from Mr. Powell a relevant statement that enough cricket isn't played in the Caribbean. And I know that's a fact. And I know that Barbados does try its best with cricket at all levels. How difficult is it for an administration within an island to try to put mm-hmm. on enough fixtures and opportunities for cricketers to develop them, because we know of the constraints of Cricket West Indies. Mm-hmm. How difficult is that for the BCA?
Well, Dr. Ford, in Barbados, between April and December, there are 1,200 organized cricket matches under the auspices of the BCA. So when you have all those organized matches, what do you think is more critical? is having cricket being an attraction to young people. So what I mean, we may have more organized cricket, yes, in an island, and other islands may be challenged to do it. What is for us important is to get that softball type cricket, that tape ball type cricket, encouraging younger players, both male and females, you know, to get into playing more fun type activities for the game. So what you can do is then unearth talent that is, you know, really a part of the DNA of most Caribbean cricketers. And then we think that the administrators like myself and, you know, Johnny Grave and others would need to do is to ensure that there are systems and academies that can really develop that skill. And then what Kieran Powell said is so, so true, is that you then want at the regional senior level to have a competitiveness and a number of games that really bring value to a person who may play 10 or 15 years of first-class cricket. We've got too many players, gentlemen, that play 5-10 years, and they've only got 50 first-class regional games. So that's really where we need to focus, and we're very happy to play our part in that journey.
Now, let's come back to you, Nicole. Hold your horses, Philo. Let me just go to Nicole. Of course, tomorrow there's going to be a big presence of your organization there, the big finals, Queen's College up against Foundation at Yorkshire. It starts at 11, and no doubt you'll be quite excited to be there. And we want to once again congratulate your credit union for being very much a part of this. Your presence today is going to be, tomorrow, as we start at 11 o'clock, is going to be of great importance as well, Nicole.
Definitely. And I will say I'm a little biased because I'm a QC girl. But I do want to wish both teams the best of luck, and may the best team win.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, we want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking to us. I know that you're getting ready, like Freddie, for tomorrow's big clash between QC and Foundation. Your final words before you go, Nicole.
Hello?
Nicole?
Hello?
Yeah.
Are you hearing me?
Yeah, we are hearing you loud and clear. Final words.
Okay. Right. So, like I said, we're very pleased to be a part of this. And I want to just wish both teams all the best in tomorrow's matches.
Wonderful. Thanks for coming and talking to us. Stephen, just before you go, no doubt you would want to let Barbadians know that Queen's College and Foundation at tomorrow of the game is going to be streamed, and there are going to be reports on the station. Stephen.
Definitely, Andrew. We want to keep the exposure going of the talented young cricketers in Barbados. So the streaming will be from 11 o'clock. We have a pre-toss discussion with the captain. So we're going to give these young men the opportunity to, you know, develop their communication skills and not just be good cricketers. The stream will be available on the www.barbadoscricket.org website. And one of the things too, Andrew, what we do, we go wider, the highlights package from this final. So whoever wins, there will be a highlight package placed to the regional audience. We go to Line and Length, and that is a program that's shown weekly across the region to outreach of some 240,000 people. So we're going to really beam this cricket, have the highlights package, and really give the opportunity for everyone to see some of the future talent within Barbados.
Thanks to you, Stephen. Thanks to Nicole. Enjoy the rest of your evening, and I'll see you tomorrow at Yorkshire, the big finals between Queen's College and Foundation. It starts at 11 o'clock, and as I said, it's going to be streamed, and it's also going to be on VOB with some reports. Stephen and Nicole, have a good evening.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Thanks,
if I may, Andrew, before I go, just for 1 minute.
Sure.
If I may, Andrew, for 1 minute before I go, I just want to also let everyone know, come next Friday, there's a wonderful campaign. Cricket Comes to Town, Meet the Players. This is on the eve of the West Indies versus England tour. The Barbados Cricket Association and Cricket West Indies will be taking a number of our players to be at two venues, Oystens at 4 p.m. and then Pelican Village at 5 p.m. for a cultural and a culinary explosion. And we'll be also giving the opportunity for West Indies players to interact with their many fans. So that's next Friday, December 8th, and you will hear during the course of this program and for the rest of the week mm-hmm. of this very exciting initiative by the BCA and CWI.
Wonderful, Stephen. And of course, the doors of Mist and the guests are always open, so we hope to hear a lot more when you join us next week. Thanks to you, Stephen Leslie.
Thank you, and good night, gentlemen.
All right, let's go back to Johnny Grave now. Johnny, in terms of the World Cup, plans are on the way. Number one, I hope that everything is going well. Are you up to date with your planning? When are we going to get the itinerary now? There's been a lot of talk. I know that on this show a couple weeks ago, we had President Dr. Shallow and Condé Riley was very much a part of that show. And I got a stinging letter from President Shallow. Don't know if you saw it, but that was a very stinging letter to Condé. I haven't heard anything about it really since then. And just want to know from you, when are we going to get the itinerary? Johnny, can you tell us? It's long and waiting.
It certainly is, Andrew. Yeah, we've been waiting many months now to get that. We're working very closely with our counterparts at the ICC. We'd kind of hoped that with the Cricket World Cup ending, we'd get a quick confirmation. The final team, we had the 19th team confirmed today with Namibia confirmed as the winners of the African qualifier that's happening at the moment, having won all their games. It's going to go down to the wire in terms of the final, the 20th place. We'll know that by the end of this week, whether it's going to be Kenya, Uganda, or whether Zimbabwe will, having stuttered in their first two games, come off the rails and nick the final place. So hopefully on the weekend we'll be announcing all the 20 teams, and then we're in the final stages on the 50,000th version of the schedule. And we hope that we will get that confirmed in the coming week. We're obviously desperate to announce it. We know fans are desperate to know, particularly in the build-up to Christmas, when people want to be thinking about their plans for next year and where they're going to be travelling and how they can watch and follow the games. It's absolutely crucial from a Cricket West Indies perspective that we get confirmation of the match schedule this side of Christmas, and that's certainly what we're pushing for. Having all 20 teams confirmed is obviously helpful. And yeah, we're hoping that we can get the match schedule announced at some point during the England tour.
And you have confirmed who will host the finals and the semi-finals. That has been confirmed. It's just a matter of for the public to know now. Is that right, Johnny?
The match schedule is changing all the time, unfortunately. We get regular feedback from ICC stakeholders, particularly Star Sports, the number one, I guess, stakeholder when it comes to confirming match schedules, as the by far, you know, the number one investor in cricket. So, yeah, look, it's a complicated process. What we have done is a final match schedule has gone out to the to internally within the ICC, and will shortly be going to the full members and associate members who are taking part for their feedback. So, hopefully, as I say, in the last few weeks, but Everything is subject to change until it's confirmed. And it's not for Cricket West Indies to confirm it. It is an ICC event, and therefore it's for ICC to confirm. We are the hosts. We're not the decision maker when it comes to the match schedule.
I see. Are you behind in your planning, Johnny?
Yeah, I think we would be. We would say we would be. Ideally, we would have confirmed the match schedule 12 months out. And obviously, we're not 12 months out. We're beyond that. At the same time, you know, unfortunately, we had to get used to doing things much quicker in COVID. And yeah, I'm really confident we can still execute a fantastic tournament. But all of us would like more time. You can never have enough when it comes to planning an event of this size. But we are hugely experienced in hosting international cricket. We obviously hosted with huge success the Under-19 Cricket World Cup, which is a 16-team tournament in the Caribbean. Yeah, I'm very confident that the match schedule will be approved before Christmas, and then all systems go. And obviously, we've been planning as much as we can without that match schedule confirmed. But a lot will be unlocked as soon as we know exactly when and where each match will be and where each team is travelling.
Mm. So you've got you're behind in relation to the itinerary, but are there any other areas that you're behind in?
No, but obviously, as I said, you know, a lot comes from that match schedule in terms of being able to confirm exact dates and beds for hotels, charter flight routes, timings. Everything comes from the match schedule. depending on whether matches are happening in the morning, the afternoon, or the evening, and where the teams are travelling next. So, we were, you know, the head office team is pretty much now fully resourced and in place here in Antigua. A huge amount of work is happening in the United States on that side of the tournament, and we'll make up this ground very quickly once the match schedule is confirmed, and very, very quickly we'll get on sale with tickets and start to want to make sure that we welcome the world to the Caribbean and the United States next June.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Ford, Philo Wallace, Raul Tony, David Brooks, any questions for our good friend Johnny Grave?
I'd like to just say a couple of things, Andrew. It looks as though, Johnny, a lot of work's gone into the development side. You know, the success of the emerging players, the Academy Against Ireland emerging players, the success of the West Indies A-team. You've got another A-team coming and another A-team tour later this year. So it looks like a tremendous amount of work's gone in, that's going to pay dividends, I'm sure, in the future. It's interesting, in the discussion earlier, I'm just interested to get your views. Given the focus on developing the younger players, which I'm sure is the right way to go, what would you say to the more experienced players who get dropped? Is there any way back for them? That where the tend to be the discussion points.
Johnny?
Yeah, look, I think the reality is, if you look at the Cricket World Cup final, let's look at the World Champions Australia. If you look at the age profile of those players, you look at, you know, our good friend Jimmy Anderson playing for England into his 40s. You know, there is every single evidence that senior players with that experience, even if they've been a successful international cricket in their 20s, they might have lost form or got injured. You know, there's always a path back, and there's no way that we have the talent pool to be shutting the doors or closing them on any single player. If the player's got, now, obviously, the older you get, the harder it is, and you've got to motivate yourself, and there's a huge amount of work that goes in, and you know, cricket's a frustrating game. You could do all that work for 6 months. You could either play a bad shot, lose concentration, get a bad decision, and through no fault of your own, and be walking back in the case of our batters. But look, it's something that, you know, we definitely got to. I think one of the advantages of the system at the moment is we're not writing off a whole generation of players. We are trying to manage that process of giving younger players an opportunity. And what you don't want to do with the younger players, as I think Desi tried to explain with young Athanase and Katie Carsey and others, you've got to give them an opportunity and a run in the international side, because again, the gap at the moment between our regional cricket and international cricket is too big. That's not to say that it doesn't exist in other parts of the world, but a big part of our focus is to bridge the gap between our regional cricket and in the international game and try and close that gap. Is that an easy thing to do? Absolutely not. But the academy, the investment that we need to continue to make, and the priority, not just the investment, but the priority of our facilities, and not just our mat facilities, but our practice facilities, is something that we're all very, very focused on. But again, none of these things happen overnight. It's unfortunately a long and fairly frustrating process, but it's something that we've got to be focused on, because all aspects of our cricket, men's, women's, primary school, secondary school, club cricket, every single element of it needs to improve. And the big gap in our system over the last probably 10 or so years has been that age group, high performance into academy, that player pathway of real professionalism, with elite coaches, with strength and conditioning, physiotherapy, analysts, and world-class training facilities. That's something that's been an obvious gap in our cricket for the last decade or so.
No, yeah, there's been some encouraging performances in the West Indies A. Didn't West Indies A just beat South Africa? You had a decent team out in the first test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did, and some standout performances. So again, that's all, you know, what we're trying to achieve. You know, they're development tours, but as fellow has rightly reminded us when I've appeared on this show before, that winning is something that we can't lose sight on. Yes, you want to develop, but we want our under-19s teams, our academy teams, our A teams and regional teams to be highly focused on winning. And one of the changes that we've made with the prize money is trying to incentivize players to win and reward players for winning. We want to create a much tougher environment, and we want to, as I say, by having that tougher environment, we think we'll raise standards. And by raising standards at regional level, we're going to close that gap between regional and international and hopefully give players a greater opportunity to move from regional level into the international game. But everything is still work in progress. And yes, there's some encouraging signs. You know, the asset of Coolidge Cricket Ground that we now have is a big difference. And it's no surprise to me that that venue and facility is being used pretty much 300 plus days of the year. So, you know, across our men's and women's programs. So it's good to see. And clearly we want to replicate that across the entire Caribbean. So every territory has their own version of Coolidge Cricket Ground as a high performance training center. And they have, you know, vibrant high performance systems. Because what we've seen pretty much consistently is when a West Indies team is put into a fairly basic high performance program, and given that support, and more importantly, given that preparation time and support to prepare, they execute much better. So, you know, that's everything that we're trying to do, which is why we've invested in this camp before England. You know, we want our players to prepare properly and to be focused and ready for battle and to win. That's what it's all about.
Well, Johnny, there are some questions coming in for you. 441790, you can certainly participate. You can certainly send me a WhatsApp. When does Haynes' contract end and will the position be advertised? Johnny?
Desmond's contract runs till the end of the T20 World Cup, so end of June next year.
All right, end of June next year. Very wonderful, wonderful. And Karen, I know you've had some concerns too in relation to payment. Do you want to talk to Johnny about that? The fact that you are not paid the way you should be. I mean, it's taken long to get that money into your bank account. What's going on there, Mr. Powell?
Andrew, if it's one person that knows how I feel, it's Johnny Graves. I've had multiple conversations with Johnny Graves about payment and payment times and contracts and obviously breach of contracts, etc. Over several years with Johnny. So Johnny definitely knows how I feel in terms of payments and having to wait several months after you've played a series or tournament to be paid. I was hoping that you'd throw me a lob to have a few questions at Johnny as well. I think that you were intentionally trying to avoid me speaking to Johnny.
Not at all. The floor is open. You got a question for Johnny Plefila? Oh, come on. Not a Mason and guests. We encourage this kind of thing.
Multiple things, actually. I think from a franchise standpoint, obviously, the board are investing heavily into the academy or A-team structures, etc. But from a franchise perspective, I think that there definitely needs to be some work done in terms of infrastructure, because I can't speak to other regions and what's happening there, but I know that in the Leeward Islands franchise setup, it's very difficult for us to get access to practice facilities on a consistent basis, whether that's getting a pitch or getting a venue at all. I mean,
right.
I remember before, it wasn't this year's Super, last year's Super 50, we were sort of kicked out of Warner Park in St. Kitts because there's a football match happening on the cricket field. You know, so things like that should never impede a professional team's preparation for a tournament. You know, we're in 2023 where everyone around the world has indoor centers, etc. And you can hit a ball at 10 a.m. or you can hit balls at 10 p.m., whether you want. I mean, I know the first thing Johnny's thinking now is, oh, Karen, there's a lack of resources. I know what Johnny's going to say. Johnny, you don't have to speak. I can speak for you. But in response to your thoughts, if you need help finding venture financing, please call me tomorrow at any point in time when you wake up. I've had this discussion with previous administrators. My father-in-law has a venture financing group of investors that were looking to invest into West Indies cricket, as I said, under a previous administration. That never materialized. But there are options out there that, I mean, West Indies cricket needs serious levels of investment. I mean, my wife and I, for example, have a beverage company that's launching out in the GCC countries, and we've sponsored the Leeward Islands team. If you look at the back of the Super 50 shirts that the Leeward Islands played in, you'll see AYQ. That's our beverage brand. So we know of ways or we can introduce you to people that will obviously be of interest. I mean, you look at all these football leagues around the world and so many teams getting bought up for billions and billions. There are people out there that want to invest in sport. It's just to, I guess, approach the right people. Mm-hmm. But as I said, from a franchise perspective, facilities and being able to practice. I mean, I remember once, for example, the Leeward Islands didn't get to practice pitch fixed, outfield, perfect nets. The groundsman said he didn't have a hammer to stake down the nets, so we couldn't practice. You know, really? That was one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in my life. Mm. So things like this should never happen.
Never.
In a professional setting.
Mm-hmm. All right.
What I would say, Andrew, is that in you know, the strategic plan that we're working on that will be launched in January, facilities is a big thing that we focused on. You know, Kieran has direct access to me and is never shy in giving his feedback, and it's always gratefully and respectfully received. We had a really good interaction with the players during the CPO and the two summits that we got with the men and the women, and the feedback was, not unsurprisingly, that the facilities need to be improved. The franchise system we know isn't delivering on our objectives well enough. You know, one of the things that we're looking to do as a legacy of the T20 World Cup is what's happened in a lot of the UK grounds, where we might only have 4 to 6 strips in the middle. You know, we can build a similar number to the left and right, and therefore suddenly have 18 pitches, which means the point that Kieran makes, which is, you know, then we've got 18 pitches for our players to prepare to practice on. That means that they can have decent rotation, which means you're always playing on good fresh wickets, and you're not killing them. You're just using them, and then they go into their maintenance work and repair. Obviously, if you are on the middle of the ground, then you're not using, you can use the same equipment and the same staff. So all of these things in terms of dedicated practice facilities is what we need, because players will be motivated to practice more if they've got good wickets and good facilities. Mm. And we need to make it as easy as we can for our players to practice as hard and as often as they can. And at the moment, there's too many barriers and too many frustrations, as Kieran rightly says, in terms of facing players when they might have the desire and will to train. Too many barriers are put in their way in order to do that. And clearly that's nonsensical. So it's a big challenge for us to work with all the stakeholders, to work with the territorial boards to improve the franchise system, to work with our governments and other stakeholders to improve facilities. Cricket is an expensive sport, but at the same time, you know, we're investing millions of dollars into the franchise system, and we need to make sure we're allocating those resources in the right areas. Otherwise, we're wasting money, and we can ill afford to do that.
All right, let's pause for business calls. When we come back, we'll go to Philo. I'm sure he's got a question or two. Dr. Ford and Royal Tony Mason and guests brought in association with our very good friends at ASFE Wet Rum, the best shot of the day.
If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, let's go to Philo Wallace. Philo.
Hi, Andrew. Just want to shift for a little bit. I just want to offer my condolences to the Stout family for the passing of Richard Stout.
Mm-hmm.
I know Kevin has been a guest on this program, so I just want to offer my condolences to the music, to the entertainment industry, and also to the Bethel family. But for Johnny, obviously, the big thing is facilities, just facilities. But you have the facilities at Coolidge in Grenada, I mean in Antigua. You have the Brian Cricket Academy to Aruba. Would that be considered as a high performance center for Trinidad? And is this high performance center facilities that you're looking at, is this something that Cricket West Indies, the board now, is going to try to get the regional boards to buy into, to see the importance of these high performance centers across the region?
That's certainly the intention, is to use not just the facility here in Antigua, but also the programs that are being run out of it as a sort of blueprint for the region. We've had talks, high-level talks with the Trinidad and Tobago government around the Brian Lara Cricket Academy, of it becoming not just the international venue that was always the vision, but to be actually a bona fide academy for certainly the southern part of Trinidad. At the moment, the National Cricketer Centre in Couva is sort of mid-Trinidad, and obviously Queen's Park Oval are doing a good job on driving the game in the capital. So, yeah, in our mind, for a country of the size of Trinidad and Tobago, we'd want to have, you know, if we could, the academy in the south, the pre-facilities at the National Cricket Academy in Couva, and also supporting Queen's Park and the activities in the capital. So, yes, in short order, that is exactly the vision, and we've had very positive talks with the president in Guyana about similar across the three counties in Guyana. And obviously we've got some facilities in Barbados in terms of good club grounds, 3Ws that was mentioned earlier in Kensington. I visited a few years ago the gymnasium facility that isn't currently being used, but I think we've got to work with you know, government and also the private sector, and as Kieran says, maybe CPL franchises and outside investors to develop our facilities, particularly facilities where we know that we can have revenue generating activities. And for me, the exciting part of Coolidge Cricket Ground isn't really the cricket facilities. It's the fact that it can be a real case study of how you can have a cricket venue or campus of 20 plus acres, and a decent portion of it can be making money 365 days of the year to actually make the facility sustainable. Because the one thing that we're very conscious of is that the maintenance of these facilities is huge. So there's no point in having big, shiny new buildings and facilities this today, and then in 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, they become run down and not to the same standard. So you have to be able to drive non-cricketing revenues for these facilities to make them sustainable and to keep them world class if you can get there. So that's certainly one of the big legacies we want for Coolidge Cricket Ground, is to demonstrate that in each particular geography of the Caribbean, you take the unique location and you build facilities that the community or the country needs, that can generate non-cricketing revenues that can then be reinvested into the cricket.
Another question for me, Johnny, is have Cricket West Indies consider dropping pitches, maybe using Coolidge as a template, trying to have a dropping pitch or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess with America, we're currently building drop-in wickets in Florida that are going to be bussed up in May to New York and Long Island, which is pretty ambitious. But yeah, drop-in technology is, I don't think it's necessarily something that we're as excited on about the hybrid technology. The hybrid technology that's being used where you stitch, I don't know what the expression would be, plastic grass into, weaved with the natural grass, but a bit like your and my hair needs to happen, Philo. But that technology is quite exciting, because what it does is it still gives you a natural performing wicket, but the maintenance of it is significantly less, the wear and tear, and therefore the amount of work that needs to go back in to regenerate it is less. It's been trialled in the UK for about 3 or 4 years now, and I think actually they've announced recently, the ECB, that you can use hybrid wickets in the county championship. So that's the kind of technology that I think does excite us, because it means that we know the demand is there for all of our facilities, and they probably get overused through good intentions and enthusiasm. And the more we can protect those, and the more we can get out of each wicket, I think is, particularly in the footholds and areas like that that get the wear and tear, that's definitely something that we're quite excited about, how we can use that technology to get more use out of the facilities that we have.
In terms of the US, if you look at the World Cup, have you worked out in terms of, well, but you don't have the itineraries yet, but what part of the United States will be actually hosting T20 matches? Can you tell us?
I can tell you what the current plans are. The current plans are to host them in Dallas, Florida, and New York.
Say that again. Dallas, and, Florida, and New York. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see.
Dallas. Yeah, so there's the Grand Prairie Ground in Dallas that was used for Major League Cricket. Mm-hmm. There's the Broward Stadium in Lauderhill,
right,
in Florida, that we've obviously played recently at. And then there's a park called Eisenhower Park in Long Island in Nassau County, that we're that's right next to the golf course that will be used for the Ryder Cup when it's next hosted in the States. And that's the venue that we're looking to build a facility specifically for the World Cup.
I see. Roll in the questions. Roll.
Sorry about that. Right here. No, I think the... See, I think Mr. Greer would have answered every single thing that was asked and some of the questions that I was going to ask you, but especially from Powell with regards to facilities. So I think I'm good. It's your job. Okay. To have this candid response to some of the questions. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, I think that, you know, as a show and as cricket lovers, we have to be realistic. And you know, I have to applaud Johnny and Dominique over the years coming to the show and the enthusiasm they have exuded, the positive things they've said about West Indies cricket. But as an administrator, as a former administrator, I'm still aware, even though Mr. Paul would disagree, that revenue drives all the ideas, all the development. And, you know, the BCA shows something. The youth is a big driver of revenue and development and the future, which is something you have to invest in. But the truth is, the brand is a nostalgic reflection of what it was before, but it isn't something that's bringing in the revenue. I know that Mr. Powell is saying there are people out there that want to invest, but the truth is, if that were the case, we'd be overrun with investment. We'd have title sponsors for everything. Nobody would be paid late. But the truth is, guys, we have a revenue deficit that is inhibiting West Indies cricket, and that's because the big three control cricket. And the truth is, for the islands, even though Barbados does what it can, all the islands have their deficiencies. And you know, I have to credit Cricket West Indies for doing what it can with what little revenue that it has. But you know, we have our limitations, and we have to try to do the best that we can with those limitations and really be realistic what our expectations should be. But that being as it may, we still have to try to be efficient. And I think that's something that Johnny has spoken about. And, you know, that's the important thing. You know, we have our disagreements about selection and about other things. And, you know, this basic lack of, you know, being able to practice and the franchise is not operating the way that it should. How do we expect to get the results that we clamor for and to have our frustrations relieved if we have these basic deficiencies? And you know, I know the cricketing public is hurting. I know that players are hurting. Everyone's trying their best to see what's best for West Indies cricket. But the truth is, we need more money to get everything done. That's the bottom line. I know that Johnny and Cricket West Indies are trying their best, but you know, sometimes we have to just wake up and smell the coffee and try to move on from there. That's what I'd like to say. It isn't a question. I think we can question and question Johnny and go on till the cows come home. But I think sometimes we have to really be realistic and look the situation of our cricketing nation collectively, you know, and be willing to accept where we are and see where we can move on in a positive way.
I just want to go back to you, Karen. Earlier you said that the CPL wasn't doing a lot for us. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Got a headache now. As the CPL, it doesn't really develop West Indies cricket per se. When you look at the players that West Indies cricket are trying to push to represent the West Indies, hardly any of those guys get exposure or opportunities to play in the CPL. The CPL is more so for, I guess, T20 freelancers, if that makes sense, but guys that don't necessarily represent the region as much. And obviously with outside internationals coming in to play the T20 format, or the CPL, sorry, to be specific, You sort of want your local players to be able to rub shoulders, share dressing rooms, be in hotels with these guys and obtain that knowledge. Because even our own T20 stars that go off and play in these leagues, it's not a situation where they come back and play much regional cricket. So that information attained overseas doesn't sort of trickle back into West Indies cricket. So there's no real benefit from the CPL to West Indies cricket. Hence why I said a Caribbean T20 might be more beneficial, because then you'd have the likes of all of our T20 stars sort of playing amongst the younger local players. I mean, and it's twofold as well, because for me, I sort of look at it from the other end of the spectrum, where I think that we need to do a lot more to ingratiate our older players back into the West Indies system as well, whether making them attached to franchises in whatever way, because you can't have the likes of Viv Richards and Clive Lloyds, etc., wandering about the world, offering advice to different leagues or different countries, and we have them at our disposals, but we're not sort of maximizing them, because I mean, when this level of education, like when these guys pass, we can't sort of go to their graves and dig up their knowledge base. We need to be able to tap into that on a daily or weekly or once monthly basis, whatever the case is, and have these guys around, whether it is their local regional teams or West Indies team, in some sort of marketing capacity where they help to, I guess, be brand ambassadors for West Indies team or West Indies cricket on a whole. But we need to be able to tap into their resource base and sort of use that education, whether on, as I said, on an academy level or on franchise level, definitely 100% needs to happen, because we can't afford to lose anything else as a region. Like we need to be maximizing every single thing that we have at our disposal at the moment.
Now, let's come back to Johnny, the couple of minutes left in the show. When did the English arrive in, Johnny?
They've arrived, Andrew. Did you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, they arrived today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, was
you're obviously not following West Indies cricket on Twitter or X, as it's now called.
Was there a press release?
No, there are lots of photos on Twitter of the English team arriving in Antigua on the West Indies account. So we find following us on Twitter than read our press release.
So the answer is no there.
How are the sales going, Johnny? How are the sales going, Johnny?
Sales are going okay. We're up on tourist numbers from the official operators. Sales are going, coming in on a daily basis online, and we expect when the box offices open across the regions ahead of the matches that, you know, that's really where we expect and hope that with this, you know, this pre-Christmas series that people will be flocking to the games, and for once we can have a majority of West Indians in the fans and make them proper home games rather than too many of the Barmy Army, just enough to...
The Barmy Army wants to get out of the cold.
Well, exactly. Just enough to fill our coffers, but not enough to dominate and not support the teams. So, yeah, we're really hoping that particularly the weekend matches and when we get into the T20s, that we're going to get huge local support and really rally behind Darren and Shay and Rodman and beat the English.
It's franchising the kits, you know, the shirts, and you know, in the World Cup, everyone came to the game in their clothes and bought an Indian shirt and kind of filled up the place. Do you think that's a legitimate avenue for us to raise revenue? Yeah, I'm not sure if that's something we control or not.
Yeah, it has to be. We're obviously going into a new kit partnership. We announced that the other day with Macron. All the kit is here in Antigua. And, we'll be taking as much of it around the region as we can, making it available for fans to buy. But it's definitely a big focus of the commercial team is to ensure that our merchandise is available and accessible to fans, not just at matches, but all year round online, because there's a a huge amount of appetite within not just West Indies fans around the world, but actually, you know, we're still the second favourite team of most teams, and therefore buying a piece of maroon merchandise is still something that we know there's demand for. So something that we've not done particularly well, but something that we're definitely looking and focusing on to improve so that fans can buy and online and in stadiums.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the numbers for Antigua, though, you expect what? 50%, 75% in terms of numbers at the ground, Johnny?
Well, I think for Sunday, Sunday obviously it's a day game rather than a day night game, but we still expect, you know, big local crowd on Sunday, and then, you know, clearly probably on the midweek game slightly less as we enter into peak tourist season and people looking to work and schools still operating. So I think Wednesday will be lower than Sunday, but certainly for Sunday, even though it's the 50 over format, which we know isn't quite as popular as the T20, we're hoping for a big crowd on Sunday up at the Sir Viv Richards Stadium.
And in Barbados,
I don't need to ask you a question. These 350 over games, hold on, Andrew, these 350 over games, these are games that will go towards our qualification for the 2027 World Cup?
Yeah. I mean, basically, the rankings is, particularly when we're playing, and this is the part that we've worked very closely with the players on, making sure that absolutely everyone is pellucidly clear that every single game, particularly the games where you're playing a team that is ranked above you. And we have laboured this point to the players that this is the opportunity to really make a difference, step change difference in your rankings position. Obviously, we did okay against India. We went 1-1 and lost the final game there and won the T20 series. But that message to the players that these matter. We've been very, very clear to the players over the last week that our brand around the world needs this series to go well. You know, we've missed out on a World Cup. Yes, we did okay in the India series, but we need this. We need to perform well. Players should be very, very clear on that. And I think, you know, the IPL announcements of players being released, the fact that West Indies players are not in the forefront of franchise minds, having missed out 2 months of cricket in India, this is an opportunity for our players to remind the world that we're still a force to be reckoned with, and we're not going to go away quietly and give up. And certainly we've been very clear this week that the opportunity when we play these big teams, and in the next, you know, three series in a row, really, India at home, England at home, and Australia away, you know, that is the opportunity to make big progress in the rankings. So there's a long answer to your question, Philo, but that's because we're very, very focused now on making sure that there's not one player that steps over the rope in this series that doesn't understand the importance of these games, notwithstanding the importance to our fans and the need to actually give them some Christmas festive cheer, because it's you know, for all of us, watching a World Cup without the West Indies in it is not something that we ever want to endure again.
I see. Well, we want to thank you very much indeed, Johnny, for coming and being very much a part of it. Thanks to you, David Brooks. Thanks to Raul Tony. Thanks to our very good friend, Dr. Ford, and of course, Philo Wallace. And young Paul, Kieran Powell, hope you don't get into trouble with this interview, you know, because, you know, sometimes they can victimize you when you speak. But of course, you would be inspired by the thought that truth is not always popular, but truth is always right. And Johnny, I'm still looking for the press release in relation to the arrival of the English team, hence the question. Twitter, fine, but you got to do a press release, Johnny. All right, I won't discuss that with you any further. I'm looking. I haven't seen it as yet. Mason and guests, of course, we'll come back again next week. Thanks to all of our friends. That press release, Johnny, we need to see it. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a better tomorrow. It's good night.